Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and welcome to episode number 20 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things be even more innovative. Today's guest on the podcast is David Heakley of Cycling Inform, an online cycle coaching company which David and his partner Jody have transformed from a one-on-one coaching service to an online membership model with great leverage, and as a result, they've achieved massive growth in their business. This is a fascinating interview where David tells us how he has gained that leverage, gives us some tools which he's using to do that. There are a lot of lessons for all of us in this interview, so stay tuned. As always, this podcast is sponsored by InnovaBiz, where we help smart business owners achieve more things with their website and save time and money and grow their business in doing so. Of course, at InnovaBiz, we do much more than just build websites. We provide solutions to our clients' needs by leveraging the power of the internet in innovative ways. If you want to find out more, go to our website at innovabiz.com.au, or if you're ready to see how our magic might be able to help you, then apply for our website accelerator session at innovabiz.com.au/WAC. Before we meet David, a quick competition announcement. This week's competition prize is a copy of The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. These days, subscription businesses are not limited to newspapers and magazines as they were in the past. And Warrilow's book talks about the secret to finding and keeping your automatic customers. So stick around for details on how you can enter the draw to win that competition prize later on in the interview. Now, let's get into the innovation hive and get the buzz from David Heakley.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to have here with me today on the InnovaBuzz podcast, all the way from Mansfield in the Victorian High Country, David Heakley, who is a coach and also the business owner of Cycling Inform. David, welcome to the podcast. It's a privilege to have you here.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Now, before we learn about David and all the fantastic things he's doing in his business, a quick competition announcement. Today's prize, I think, is really apt given the topic. It's a copy of the book The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. So these days, virtually anything you need can be purchased through subscription. So, you know, in the old days, you subscribed to newspapers and magazines. But today, with the internet, you can subscribe to things like supplies of groceries online, or cosmetics, or razor blades. And as we're going to learn today, also to your cycling and fitness programs. Now, Warrilow's book talks about the secret to finding and keeping automatic customers, as he calls it. So stay tuned later on in the interview to learn how you can enter the draw to win that prize. All right, David, before we learn about some of the innovative things you're doing at Cycling Inform, tell us a little bit about your background, and let's go right back to when you were a child. What ambitions did you have? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I think my interest in running a small business was really fired up by a visit that I had to one of my uncles when I went for a bit of a cycling tour around New Zealand. And I spent some time with one of my uncles, and he ran a bakery business. And he had a very nice house on top of a hill with his family. And I compared that to my dad, who was a public servant. And really, I realized very quickly that obviously the way to get ahead in life is to start up small businesses. So that's really been a passion for me. And I've spent quite a bit of time doing research on small businesses. And it wasn't until I moved to Australia in the late 2000s, and I was here for 10 years before I really decided on what I really wanted to do, which was around, you know, my passion for cycling. Mm. But in between that, you know, I was running a photography business, and that was reasonably successful. But really, one of the biggest issues with that is that, you know, I used to do a lot of wedding photography, and you know, you don't have your weekends free.
That's
and stuff
right,
like that.
Yeah.
So you know, it's like, well, that's not going to work as something that I want to step into full time. But as a kid, I had a great passion for cycling, and I really loved that. And it's great to be able to build a business around that. But in that time, when I moved to Australia, I really moved into, well, I worked in IT as a senior project manager, and that's really, you know, I have an engineering background. I left school and started, did an apprenticeship in electronics as my career, and really that flowed on into the computer industry. And when I stepped into Y2K projects, when I entered Australia, you know, just before 2000, you know, I was project managing those. And I, the last 7 years of my IT career, I was working for one of the largest telcos in Australia, and I deployed the largest voice recognition platform. It's actually for Telstra, and that was a very big project. Mm. And we've, you know, the voice recognition platform, the largest in the Southern Hemisphere. So if you ever ring Telstra, or if you deal with a company that has a voice recognition service, then guaranteed that it's being delivered by the platform that I built for them. So that was an exciting piece of work. But all that innovation's really gone into what I have today, which we'll talk about a little bit later on.
So a lot of the project management, and that would be a really good experience there.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Look. IT project management is really a bit of an art, and you can get wildly wrong results if you don't know the sort of the basics about being able to manage scope creep and project management and resource management and stuff like that. So I think my foundation in IT and project management has really helped me be able to stitch together what we've got today. So that's been really good. Yeah.
Mm. Now, my audience, or those that know me in my audience, know that I'm also a real passionate cyclist, and I came across you, I think maybe could have been 2005 or so. Were you running Cycling in Form then?
Cycling in Form started in 2007 officially. So we started off running our boot camps, and which are our training camps and our coaching services, and we had a few products that we were selling then as well, online products. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember getting regular newsletters from your partner Jody, and I've been following that, and I've been fascinated because, as you say, you were running boot camps and one-on-one training in those days, and I've been fascinated to watch your business transform into a fully online business, which is what I'd like to talk about today, because it's a really fascinating model.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a 7-year journey, really. So when we started out, we were selling training camps. We started running our boot camp training camps, which we ran twice a year at Bright. And then to supplement that, we had to sell products and provide coaching services. So the coaching services that I was running was a one-on-one coaching service. And that's where people would sign up for 12 weeks. And we would I'd coach them, deliver a training program to them on a 4-weekly basis. We'd hook up every week to review them, track their data using their data that they're downloading from their computer. Mm. And we sold a few products. We had our Matt Brindle functional strength training product, and we had a few other training product that we sold online. So they were physical, and they actually were physical products, and then we moved to delivering them electronically. So originally they were DVDs, so they were like a 12-week training program for building your aerobic base. But the biggest problem that I have with that was that the boot camps obviously came along twice every year. Mm. It was good the fact that we would usually pre-sell them, so we had all this cash in our bank account that was earning interest, so that was fantastic. And the coaching stuff was a real nurture type business model, which was awesome. It wasn't a hunting model, but the problem with the coaching stuff is that it's very time consuming doing one-on-one coaching, writing programs. And the other thing is that I could only coach a maximum of 24 people at any one time. Otherwise, my quality of service would diminish with that. So that's why to keep our cash flow going, we had to develop training products which were based on our experience with coaching. So we put together these 12-week training programs that people could purchase. But the problem with that is that it's a real hunter sort of model. You're not back into the nurture model. You're not in this reoccurring model. You're into a sort of a sales model where you're hunting for the next sale. So So while the membership was good for the coaching thing, it was, you know, and that ongoing nurture sort of revenue from a, you know, from a membership based model was really good. I couldn't leverage it. So the next step from that was to go into a full blown, totally commit to a membership model where we deliver the training services to using a one to many model. And we used, you know, we used that membership area as a way to deliver those training programs. So instead of, well, basically what we did was we converted our 12-week training programs into delivering them online. So instead of buying a, you know, one-off product, we actually had that as a product where we would provide basic sort of coaching as well as the delivery of that product through a drip-fed system. Does that make sense? So it's been a big journey, and I suppose for me the biggest thing was, you know, it's been a real experiment around, I wanted to produce an online business that I could run anywhere in the world and deliver a coaching service to anybody in the world. So that was the first thing. So we were able to do that with our remote coaching, our one-on-one model. The problem was that it wasn't leveraged. So the next thing was, can we leverage it? You know, what can I do to leverage that model? So the membership area is really the way that we've been able to deliver that. So it's taken 7 years to develop it. And a lot of the technology that we used to deploy it wasn't available 7 years ago. That's a fantastic thing about IT, is that it's just moving so fast, and the technology, you know, like the technology that we use, you know, we couldn't deliver the stuff 7 years ago. The technology wasn't available to do that. You know, the products have only really been mature in the last couple of years to be able to do what we do. So it's fascinating. So we really love using technology to leverage our business.
That's a wonderful story, and like I say, I've sort of followed a little bit from the periphery, but I'm just looking at the website over here, and you know, notice that you've got like international phone numbers and addresses, so you know, being able to deliver the services online, and particularly the one to many, opens up the world for you, doesn't it? You know, you're not limited to, and like you say, because you're quite remote in where you're living right now, and you've made that choice because you've been free to, you know, you can run the business from wherever you want.
Well, we're seriously looking at buying a property in Europe so we can stay there during summer. You know, their summer, winter, right? Because Mansfield gets pretty cold, so it gives up our options for that. You know, running a business that's not geographically dependent is really important, and that's one of the big things around a lot of businesses that are structured today, is that really you take their business location, drop a pin on a map where that is, and then their clients that they can access are really only, you know, within maybe 20 kilometers of that radius, and that's a real big limiter. You know, and by having a business model where you can deliver good quality services online to anybody in the world, from anywhere in the world, really opens up a huge market to you. You know, so it's not uncommon, you know, like I coach a lot of people. Like, for example, when I moved to Mansfield, coaching local people here in Mansfield was not part of our business model. We weren't even interested in doing that. Although we have picked up a few clients that do some altitude training in our training studio and stuff, that really wasn't our intent. We didn't have any of the locals as part of the business model for moving here from Mansfield. It was basically, what can we do to leverage America and UK? Those are really our growth markets. And the great thing about that is that because cycling is a bit seasonal, you know, we pick up a lot of the recreational riders during the summer here in Australia.
Yeah.
But during winter, they kind of drop off a little bit. We certainly pick up a lot of people in Perth and Queensland during winter because the weather's a bit better there. But things sort of drop off in Melbourne, Tasmania, Canberra during winter because it's a little bit cooler. So it's nice to be able to tap into the international markets overseas when they're in the Northern Hemisphere and take advantage of their summer.
That's a great point, yeah, because you know, it removes all the seasonality, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and the great thing about, you know, the targeting that we can do with our marketing these days using, you know, like Facebook is fantastic. We can target people in states in America with our products, and we can also, although we haven't done it yet, we can actually deploy a website that's American based on their location. So if they're hitting our website in America, we could actually have, and this is something that we'll be working on in the future, is we actually have, you know, the transactions in US dollars and the language being delivered in, you know, US English. So that's something that we'll build into our members area in the future. At the moment, it's Australian dollars, and you know, we use Australian English to deliver, you know, our content. Yeah. But we can certainly geographically deliver that. But the marketing is fantastic. Never, you know, like, I'm really excited actually, because never in the history of marketing can you actually segment and deliver advertisements to real target markets so cheaply.
It's great, isn't it?
Yes, just fantastic. So it really opens up, for a business like myself, it just opens up huge amounts of opportunities. And we've been very successful with our Facebook marketing, our targeted Facebook marketing, and making sure that our campaigns are customized and that language is specific to, you know, the area. So really good.
So is that the main source of your new leads, so Facebook advertising?
Yeah, we do. We do a couple of things. One is that we advertise through Facebook, and the other one is that we partner with event organisers. So, for example, we do a lot of work with Bicycle Network around their events here in Australia, and they run some big events like the Peaks Challenge series and the Great Victorian Bike Ride and Around the Bay. So we partner with those people. We'll do a lot more partnering in the future. Partnering is really good because it opens up their databases to our database. So we have a basic sort of opt-in that we deliver free content to their members to help them prepare for the event. So it's kind of, it's really win-win opportunity, because the event partners that we work with, they're looking for ways in which they can make sure that their members have a really good experience at their event, so that they walk away from them going, oh, that was fantastic. And to do that, they need to be prepared for it, especially the really big events like, you know, the Peaks Challenge Series, it's a 230-kilometre ride with lots of, you know, over 4,000 vertical metres. It's something that takes you, you know, the average rider somewhere between somewhere around 11 to 12 hours to complete. So they obviously need to prepare for it. So for us, helping deliver the training content to those partners in a free way, we pick up a whole lot of prospects that we then work on converting. Like, obviously not all of them convert, but we get a good percentage of them converting into the training products that we offer, because they understand that it helps them prepare for the event. So it's a real win-win for us and the partners that we partner with, because their clients get a really good experience because they're prepared for the event, and we deliver that, you know, content to them. So
And how's the structure of your content, or the structure of the products that you offer, or the levels of membership? How's that set up?
Oh, okay. So how that works is that, for example, we'll provide a high level free training program, and then also training tips leading up to the event to our partners, in exchange for their email address. So the partner will have an event, and they'll say, click on this link for your training material, and that link will go to a landing page where they subscribe to our training material. We deliver them, as soon as they sign up, a high-level getting started training package that includes a documents and videos. It's quite comprehensive and of a great value to them, and it's all delivered for free in exchange for their email address. And then we just progressively deliver content through that. So there's a getting started, and then there's nutrition and hydration, and then we provide them with some training update information a little bit later on. And then close to the event, we, you know, provide them with information around preparing for the actual day. So making sure that they've got, you know, the right equipment on the day, clothing, those sort of things, you know. So, and then the marketing is pretty simple based on that. We look at their pain points around, you know, obviously the high level training program gives them a bit of an overview of what they need to do, but don't go into the detail of it. And for them, if they want to take it, if they're really serious, they want to take it a step further and they're interested in paying for a service, then, you know, our coaching services align really, really well into that. So we provide them with a 24-week training program that has a detailed training program and coaching. They get unlimited access to me as a coach via email. They get access to all our video content, our structured 12 or 24 week training programs, and also they get access to our forum, where a whole lot of people that are training for the event get to talk about it, and you know, about equipment and preparation and nutrition and all that sort of stuff. So it's a real good community building into the event, and a lot of people get a lot of value out of that. So that's how that sort of structure basically works. And it's just a real simple sort of model. There's obviously a lot of technology behind delivering all of that, and the products that we use to do that are quite complex, but the experience to the end user is fantastic. So
Yeah, I want to come back to community in a moment, but just so that's a monthly subscription then, and they get access to all the different training programs.
Yeah. So the training programs are drip fed to them. And that's the great thing about having a membership area is they unlock their content as they go. So they can obviously be on one training program at a time. And we may have training programs specific for events, like, for example, the Peaks Challenge Falls Creek. So we've got a 24-week training program for that event. They can enter that program at any time. We originally had a 12-week training program leading up into that event, but we had a lot of people that were wanting training before that. So we used to put them on the aerobic base builder or the hill climber training program, which is a 12-week training program leading into it. And then when they were 12 weeks out from the event, we'd switch them onto it. But now we've actually got because people have been asking for it, we've got a 24-week training program leading into them. So, but like I say, people can step into those training programs. Once they've finished the event, we get a reasonably good percentage of those people hanging around going on to, say, like a maintainer program, which we have, which is just a basic, 4 to 6 hour a week training program just to keep their fitness going through winter. Or they may want to continue with their training and go on to like a hill climber training program or a racing training program if they're doing racing or a time trialing training program. So we've got specific training programs that are generic, that are specific for various disciplines within cycling. So we've got aerobic base building, hill climbing, road racing, criterium racing, time trialing, as well, which is, and we're building those out all the time.
So, specific to the different audience. It's a great model because, I really like the way, there's a lot of value up front that's free without giving away the farm, if you like. For the partners, and then those people that see the value in that and see how you've helped actually get into your sales funnel and see the opportunities to actually step it up another level.
Yeah, look, and I think we get really good responses from people. They really love the product. We've spent a lot of time on making the product really easy to use. It was a bit of an interesting story moving to it because I was working with a business coach and he said, your model would be awesome for going to a member site. So originally we did kind of have a fairly low-key membership site product, but it only had sort of information in it. It was like, this is how you train and this is how you get fit and this is how you do nutrition and stuff like that, but it didn't actually have any training programs in it. And what we found is that we actually had one of our clients going, I've just signed up in your members area, really looking forward to doing the training. And I'm going, wait a minute, there's actually no training component within the members area. And when we added it, it was like adding petrol to a fire. It was like whoosh. Suddenly it became really, really successful and we thought, we're onto this. This is amazing. We really stitched it together to get it up and going just to trial it out. And it just took off. So we ran it for about 2 or 3 months, got a whole lot of learnings out of it, and then we released our brand new members area about 3 weeks ago, which has a really, really slick interface, a lot easier to use. We've really worked heavily on the usability of it, made sure it's totally compatible with mobile devices and stuff. They can, they can run it on a mobile device, so they can download their training programs, download all the content, and all the stuff unlocks. And the other thing is that when you got a members area, one of the things is what I don't want to have happen is to, spend the rest of my life doing password resets for people. So, so we've got this one-click access. So when they get the training program for the week, the email that they get that's sent out to them, the link in it, and all the emails that we send to them about updates to the training program stuff have what we call a one-click access. So when they click on the link, it automatically logs them into the members area. Okay, they don't actually need to put their password details in.
So it gives them a unique link.
Link coded to their account. They just click on it and they go straight into the members area. So there's no issues with people forgetting their passwords. Although obviously they do have a password to access the members area, this bypasses all of that. So that certainly helped us around, because it's really important to look at, because I use a support system and I get all these tickets, this is not working, that's not working, I reset my password, I haven't got my program this week, these sort of things. So we look at those and we go, okay, well, how do we automate all that? How do we resolve that issue so we don't have to spend time working taking on managing those support tickets. So we built that into the automation functionality of their product to reduce the amount of time that I spend in the business. And that's really the great thing is that, you know, I used to have sleepless nights around where's the money going to come from, you know? It's like I've got to, every day I've got to sit there going, I've got to create a new campaign, I've got to create a new sales thing to promote, I've, you know, I've got to send out an email this week to promote something so that I can sell it. And that's on the hunter model. You're out there hunting every day, you know, whereas in the nurture model, it's like we've got all these members that are just paying us money week on week on week on month on month on month. And as you build up this core body of people, it's like suddenly I don't have that stress over the top of my head going, where's that money going to come from? Because I know that I've got this recurring income coming in. So nowadays I only spend about an hour a day during the work week actually looking after my clients, working in the business. And the rest of the time I can spend either spending time with my wife or, you know, or going out for a bike ride or working you know, on the business. You know, developing new sales funnels.
Providing new products and things.
New products and stuff. So it's really freed me up, both from an aspect of the fact that I'm not so stressed out about where's the money coming from, and also that it's given me a whole lot more time. You know, it's really leveraged. They've made it super efficient. So, and that's really what we've been working on in that automation, is being able to sort out what the issues are around what our current problem product is, resolving those through automation, and then really making it a real slick model. So look, I'm really, really happy with where it's at the moment.
That's fantastic. So what keeps you awake these days then?
Well, not a lot actually.
That's good.
I'm in a really comfortable space. Certainly, since we started the business, you know, for the last 7 years, it's really been a bit of a roller coaster ride. We've had some really big learning experiences. One we had where one of the ways which I thought, oh, well, we could leverage our business by adding staff to our business. So whether it was a point where we were building up, we had about 5 coaches working for us. And the problem with that model was that the relationship that the client had was with the coach. Yeah. It wasn't with myself because it was a one-on-one relationship. And we had a few issues with that. One is that the client had the relationship with the coach rather than our company. So they sort of thought, well, why am I paying Cycling Inform when I can go directly to this coach to, you know, to deliver it? So we had that problem. And the other problem that we had, that, you know, the coach was out, you know, people saw that the coach was doing really good work with these people, so they wanted to deal with the coach directly rather than us. You know, we lost that brand. And the other major problem with that was that all of those coaches ended up setting up in competition with us at some point. So it was like, here we are, we're training these guys up to basically set up in competition to us. So it was a model that we didn't really want to pursue. So we made the decision to fire all our coaches and go back to redefining our model. And really the members area was what fell out of that, was how do we leverage our, you know, this one-to-one model without involving anybody else or taking back the control over our product and our brand. And so it's really solved that problem for us as well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about community, or ask you about community, because I was listening to one of your podcasts where you interviewed a lady that was on a training program for, I'm not sure, was it the Round the Bay or Great Victorian Bike Ride, but her feedback was that, you know, first of all, she was getting amazing results, so I'll just throw that in here now. From the program, but the thing that fascinated me as well was she talked about the community and how she got onto the forum and how people were encouraging one another there to improve and so on. So how important is that community to the whole model?
Yeah, okay, well, let's step back a bit. Really, we define, there's three needs that a person that we try and deliver in our members area. One is that there are people that just want a training program. They just want something that they can follow that gets some results, that's proven to work. And we've spent 7 years developing training programs for people and working on the best way of getting the best results very quickly. So that's the first thing that people, you know, a high percentage of the people that get onto the members area want. Then we've got the people that want to find out about how that training works. So there's like, how does the nutrition work? How do we build these programs? You know, how do we manage training load? How do we manage power? How do we deal with, you know, it's like the how-to. Those people that want to know a little bit more detail than just having a training program, they want to understand how it works. And our original membership model before we introduced the training programs was just basically that. It was just really an informative sort of product that just told people how to do it rather than actually what to do. All right, so there's those two things. And then the third component is the community. And that's people, some people just want to, and not necessarily all of them, and people like to have some or all of those components, but some people just want to hang out in an area and get supported in their cycling and talk to other cyclists, like-minded cyclists, and feel like they belong to something. Mm. So we have several types of communities. We have obviously the communities of people that are training for events. So we may have, you know, we had 170 odd people that were training for the Peaks Challenge Falls Creek training program last year and this year, early on this year. And they were all talking about the event and their training for it and how they were going, and they were hooking up with other riders on rides, and they, you know, they loved the stories. And there was a great thread running throughout the forum around, you know, how all this is going, and, yeah, you know, how people were falling off the wagon and getting back on it again, and, you know, how people were, you know, out there doing their training, and, you know, how people were getting really, really good results out of the success of the coaching program, and, you know, that, well, they were finding the whole thing really useful, and their stakeholder engagement with their partners and those are things, and, you know, what gearing they were using. I mean, just the list goes on about what they were talking about, you know. And so we have those communities, and then we have other just sort of general communities. We have communities around racing, and we have, you know, a community within our forum that talks about racing stuff, you know, racing tactics, and they provide updates. And it gives people the opportunity to just, you know, they're really passionate and cycling and excited about their cycling like we are, and you know, they just want to give their ride or race report. You know, like this weekend I went out and did this epic ride, and oh, it was great, and this is my course, and here's my data on Strava, and you know, all that sort of stuff, right? And and then we have people, you know, this is my race report, you know, this is what happened in the race, and everybody gets in there and comments on how it went. And so the community is really a really exciting area for people to really engage. And that's one of the big things, is that because we don't have a community, you know, like I'm not riding with people, you know, physically on the road. People can do this training in isolation to me, but still feel like they're part of the cycling informed community. A training for a particular event or training towards a particular goal. So it's a way in which they can engage, and that engagement's really important for retention in the members area. So there are some people that actually are not on training programs, they just like hanging out in the forum and reading the comments, and, you know, reading, because people ask questions about training, you know, what should I do here? I've, you know, been ill this week, or I've got this, you know, this work commitment coming up where I can't train, you know, for these days or whatever. And I provide feedback on that, and, you know, I provide feedback on power, and, you know, everything, anything that anybody asks in the forum. And some people just like jumping on and reading the comments within the forum and seeing what the latest things been happening in there. So,
yeah.
And they're not really any even interested in the training program, so, or any other training, they just want to hang out in the forum. So for us, I think a membership area really needs to have at least the first two components is something that you can deliver to them that's drip-fed. That's really important, because it means that they're not getting everything when they sign up.
Yeah.
And that helps with retention. So obviously, once they've consumed, you know, one of the issues that we had, once they had consumed all the informational information we had in the members area really wasn't much use to them. So by having a training program, or lots of different training programs that they can sign up to and then drip feed into, because they can only be on one training program at a time, it means that the retention, you know, we get really good retention. And that's great for anybody that's working on any consultant-based model. It doesn't have to be a training model. It can be a consulting-based model where we're delivering training content over a period of time. So having to do different modules for covering off different aspects of whatever coaching model that you're working in. And then the community really helps with retention as well, because people, when they leave, you know, if they unsubscribe, it's like suddenly they're losing this big family.
Community, yeah.
Yeah, this big community, right? So, you know, they lose contact, and we take them off our private Strava account, so they can't see anybody's, you know, Strava data. And, you know, it's like, oh, no, I'm not kidding. Because one of the things that happens when people get onto our Strava is the whole community in itself. And
that's right.
People upload their data, and suddenly they're on the cycling community, cycling informal community, and people that they've never heard of before, that are not even their friends, you know, start commenting on their rides. And it's like, oh, wow. Like,
just for those people that aren't cyclists listening to this podcast, let me explain Strava.
Strava.
So Strava is a software as a service online thing. You can upload data from your cycling computer, and it also has a social aspect. So it's a little bit like Facebook. So you follow other people, the people you cycle with generally, and then the people you have cycled with. And so you can comment on their rides, you can see their performance. It has segments, so you actually compete. It lets you know when somebody's beaten your best time for a particular segment and all kinds of things. So there's a whole community around Strava, and we have a saying in our cycling group, if it's, because often somebody will go off and forget to turn their computer on or something will malfunction. And so we say, well, if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen.
Exactly. It's really, really good. Strava's. Strava's kind of like one of those little, which we leverage off the community that Strava has and build that into our community. So it's a great point for us, but that's really how we've worked on that community side of things. And I think it's important to get that engagement happening. We've also got an engagement sequence. Once a person becomes a member, we will send an email out to them every week saying, have you had a look at this? Have you done that? Have you looked at this content? So it just helps. And we also go, give us an update on where you're going, how your training's been, give us an update on how it's progressing, whatever. So that helps with the engagement thing, and that's automatic. So, it's really important to have that. In fact, actually, we had an issue with the engagement sequence, and we decided to turn it off because we were working on other issues within the members area when we first got it up and going. And then we found that people were dropping off our membership quite readily, and it's like, oh, I wonder why that is. And then we realised that we'd actually turned off the engagement sequence. So we turned it back on again, and of course, the engagement sequence was really powerful to keep people in the loop, to keep them updated on what's happening in the members area, and updated on making sure that they felt like they were part of the community. Mm. And that we're interested in what was happening with them. So that's really important because, a lot of these people are training in isolation or they're training with a group and they secretly are on this training program to smack over their cycling buddies. It's good. Other people, there's a few different types of people. There's people like, they just want to share this amazing functionality with their friends and stuff like that. And then there's other people that are like, this is my secret weapon, so I won't tell anybody about it. Yeah. That's great. I think it's really exciting. And obviously that people really get into it and they love the product. And it's love hearing the feedback from, one of the things that really motivates me about the product is that, I feel like I'm really adding a lot of value to people out there and just helping them fast track the whole process of getting fit for events and helping with their cycling. Because there's a lot of stuff to learn and there's a lot of stuff that is really important and there's a lot of stuff that's not really important.
Because one of your points of difference around the training programs is that the efficiency, so not putting in lots of time or anything, but doing it efficiently so that you get the maximum results, right?
Yeah, look, that's something we've really worked on because our clients have really demanded it. When we were doing one-on-one coaching, they were obviously paying us good money and they wanted to see results very quickly. So we had to develop a program that was not only able to deliver good results quickly but also sustainable, because there's a lot of programs out there that deliver good results quickly but they deliver them in such a way that it's actually the training's not sustainable, and usually after about 12 weeks, they're unable to improve anymore.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was one of the foundations of our training methodology, and because I've coached so many people, I've had a lot of experience around what works and what doesn't work, and it's classic. I love using the whole 80-20 rule. 20% of the stuff that you do will give you 80% of the performance, and 80% of the stuff you do is not going to make any difference whatsoever. So it's important to find out what that 20% is and start doing that. So our training programs are based around that.
All right. So if you could wave a magic wand and fix something in the business, what would you do?
Oh, well, the business is going pretty well at the moment, and I'm really happy with where it's going. But for us, really what we're working on right now is, because we've worked so much on building out the members area, because we know it's been so fantastically good, and it's a really nice mature product at the moment, it's meant that we haven't really spent much time on our front end lead magnets and sales funnels. So if I could wave the magic wand on my business, it was adding a zero to the amount of members that we have. Mm-hmm. And I know how to do that. It's basically the next focus for me over the next 6 months is to start building out and refining those and measuring the sales funnels that we develop. So while I was over in the States at a big marketing conference, I picked up some fantastic products for helping with our development of our sales funnels.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we're going to be focusing on now. So to wave a magic wand, really all I want to do is add a zero to the amount of customers that, you know, that we've got subscribed to our service, and I'd be really, really happy with that. So I know it's not going to happen overnight, but we've certainly got a product now where we can leverage it for that to happen. So it's just a matter of getting the front end of it, the front end of our business, our sales funnels, really, you're really tuning over, you know, really cranking the handle, as we say.
That's awesome, yeah. What's the average kind of time that people stay as a member of the site?
Well, that's a really good question. We don't actually know because we've spent so much time working on developing the members area. We haven't actually put in the metrics yet, and that's I've actually a couple of mornings ago. Like, and it's crazy because I'll just wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and my head will be like spinning. I don't know whether this happens to anybody else, but it certainly happens to, you know, like, I'm thinking about
new ideas,
to get this sort of, you know. And I'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning or, you know, whatever, and I'll have all this stuff that'll just happen in my head. And I'll just get up and I'll start mapping it down. So about 3 mornings ago, it was like, it was the metrics morning. And there was a whole lot of metrics that I wanted to create, including what's the lifetime value of our client? Because that's really important for a couple of things. One is to measure the success of our, you know, of our membership area to make sure that that people are staying in there for a reasonable amount of time, that time is, the amount of time that you're staying in there is whatever it is, or that we're able to increase it.
Yeah.
So if it starts decreasing, then we've got an issue of engagement that we need to address. The other thing is that it also gives us the ability to be able to work out what the lifetime value of our client is based on the conversion. So as a person's coming in, we really need to start, and this will be worked out with our sales funnel and the metrics, is we've got, based on the amount of prospects coming in to our sales funnels, what's the percentage of our conversions, and then what's the lifetime value of that client. And then once we've got those figures, then we can work out how much it costs for us to get a client and what their value to us is. So for example, you know, if we convert maybe 5% of the people that opt in and it costs us X amount of dollars and the lifetime value of our client is, you know, Y, then we know with how much money we can spend on actually getting them, if that's made sense. I don't know where I'm explaining that very well, but anyway. So yeah, so to answer your question very quickly, no, I don't know what my lifetime value, but I would say somewhere between 12 weeks or more. Generally, I would say that, you know, 3 months that we'd have retention for some. We want to really map out the curve of what that is, because we know that there's a percentage of people that stay in, you know, for a long period of time. There's another percentage that there are people that drop it, you know, go into it for a month, find out that it's just really not for them, and then drop out of it. So there is some, what do they call it, churn at the front end of it. So we've got people that come in, it's not really for them. You know, they find out that actually they've got to do something. It's not a magic wand that they're actually still going to train.
Yeah.
But the great thing about those sort of people is those people love products. Rather than a members area, we'll just sell them a product. Because those are the sort of clients that love that. They'll go, oh, okay, well, I can buy this 12-week training program as a product, put it on my shelf, and I don't have to do anything.
You mean I actually have to do something after I've watched the video?
You know, so they feel comfortable that they've got the product to be able to do the training or figure out, but it's actually, they still miss that whole step about actually activating it, all right? And, you know, I know everybody's done it. We've bought something, Thought it was a good idea at the time, but you know, I haven't actually used it. You know, so whereas a members area, you know, it is something that obviously if they're not training or they're not getting some value out of it, then and there's only a percentage of people that are like that. So it's important to understand that the membership area is not a one-fix solution to meet the needs of everybody. It's only a specific type of person that's obviously active enough to actually go out and use the information, the training plans and whatever to do their training, that it's really successful with. There are people, like I say, that just, they'll buy that product and they'll go, you know, they're not. So anyway, so we've got to work out what the bell curve is with the metrics. And then, you know, for those people that drop out or those people that are not interested in the members area, then we'll actually put them into a nurture program, a nurture sequence that finds out whether they're interested in a product that they want to buy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
they might register in a year's time for another event or something, so that then...
Well, you know, they could register for an event in the members area, or they could buy just a one-off, you know, product being, you know, 12-week training program that's just electronically delivered to them as a complete product, but they can download electronically. So, it's, you know, it doesn't involve any commitment.
I think that's a really important point around the, you know, understanding the lifetime value of a client, because then. You know, that does give you the ability to say, well, here's how much I can spend on acquiring new clients, because the average lifetime value is $1,000 or whatever it might be. So I know I can spend $100 and get a 10-to-1 return. But, you know, a lot of people look at what am I selling a client, and they look at a one-off sale and they don't consider that, you know, that client over a lifetime might stay with them 10 years and buy 20 products. Or if it's a membership site, you know, they might be with you for 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, we certainly have people. I know with my coaching clients, you know, we would have clients that I coached for 5 years. You know, we had other coaches that have clients that only were interested in 12 months, you know, 12 weeks. So, you know, and the product that we were delivering was the same. It's no different between somebody that hung around for 5 years to, it's, you know, the delivery of the product was no different. It's just, you know, people are different. So it's important to understand the markets and the motivations between and the psychology of the people that you're dealing with, and making sure that, like, for example, in our members area, making sure we're delivering, you know, a training program, we're delivering information about how to train, and we've got a community in the forum, you know, making sure we're delivering those three things. It's like with the product delivery, you know, we've got a membership product plus we've got like a product. So we'll be developing all of that stuff in the near future. So yeah, look, the future's looking really good. I'm really excited about it.
All right, well, let's move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, where we ask you a series of six questions, sort of short one-sentence answer.
Yeah, right.
Get your advice on these things. So, you know, it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field of endeavor, to kind of learn from your experience. What do you see as the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think that's a really interesting question. What do they need to do to be more innovative? I think, I'm naturally quite innovative. I'm just one of these people that are always thinking about how I can do things better. So I think part of that's got to do with asking the right questions of yourself, because I know that with people, if you start asking the wrong questions, you know, your mind's very creative. It always come up with an answer to whatever question you ask. So it's important to ask the right question. And I think I think the question that needs to be asked of yourself is, how can I do this better? Instead of, you know, like for example, we had a lot of support tickets around password resets. So, you know, it's like instead of having to deal with that problem on a day in, day out, it's like, how can I make this more efficient for myself? How can I automate this or solve this problem so we don't have it anymore? So I think for me, it's about asking the right questions rather than going, this is a big drama. How can I resolve it? Does that sort of answer your question? I don't know.
So essentially, asking, challenging yourself to do things better, but asking the right questions. So it comes back to the point you were making earlier about the 80-20 rule with training. It sort of applies here as well, isn't it?
It's always important. You know, for me, it's like with our business, I suppose our business has kind of gone like this to this. And part of that's got to do with looking at what's really working rather than sweating with the details. And I know Apple did it themselves, and I like using Apple as an analogy. I know where Jobs came back, and you know, Apple was doing a whole lot of stuff, and Steve Jobs came back into the company, and he basically, he said, okay, we're only just going to focus on one or two things. And they dropped a lot of their products. But what they did do is they did what they did really well. They produced the iPod. Who would have thought? You know? And then they produced their iPhone. I mean, the story is legendary. But what they basically did was just go, whatever we're going to do, and I think it's really important, I don't know where it's about innovation, but for me, the thing is that you can either be the hero or the seagull, right? And the hero is the person or the business that is the number one business in their field. And I think it's always important to strive for that, to make sure that what you're delivering is unique and that, you know, that it's really hard for your other competitors to get into that space. And be the number one at it. Be the best that you possibly can at doing that. Forget about all the really stuff that you do ordinary. Just focus on doing something awesomely well.
That's fantastic advice. And narrow in and get rid of all the other stuff and narrow in and be the best at that.
Just be the best at that. And, you know, the companies, you know, because the seagull, they're just flying around waiting for the scraps. And that was something that I learned because I grew up in Wellington. We had a really small market. I think it was about, I don't know, don't quote me on this number, there may be about 3,000 people that live in Wellington. And what I realized, like I was running a photography business in Wellington, and what I realized was that there were two or three photographers that did exceptionally well because they're well-known, established businesses. And they did exceptionally well in their specific fields. So there was one for wedding photography, there was one for corporate photography, you know, there was one for, you know, baby photography, right? Because they did that really well. But trying to enter into that market, because there wasn't really a lot of the market there, trying to enter into that market, you really were dealing with the scraps. You know, it's just a real struggle. Those people had it sussed, they had a really good business, they were well known, and to enter into that, you know, you had to really do something really, really awesomely, so much better than them to break into that. Otherwise, you were just one of the seagulls flying around waiting for the scraps. You know, you just pick up the scraps. Because these guys were 80-20 it, you know, like they were taking up 80% of the business. And all of the final 20% was, you know, being distributed across all these other all these other photographers in the industry trying to pick up what was left. So be the best. Try and be number one.
All right, great advice. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new products or new ideas?
Best thing I've done.
Apart from staying awake at night, which is the entrepreneur's curse, I think.
You know, waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, going, I finally got an answer to that problem. It's been driving me nuts. Just ask me that question again because I've just forgotten it.
The best thing you've done to develop new ideas or products?
I think for me it's been talking to mentors. You know, like I'm a coach and, you know, I help cyclists get really good really quickly. So for me, I've worked with business mentors that have helped me look at what I'm doing and come up with some answers to the questions around, you know, the business model. Like, for example, the reason why I went into totally committed to the members area was because I was working with a business coach last year and he looked at my business model and he said, mate, this would be awesome for members. You should just do this. And it was really scary. Like, the first couple of months, I'm going, oh, my God, where is all this money going to come from? Like, I've just dropped everything that I've been doing and just focusing on this. And it's like I saw, we had, like, as soon as we implemented it, we had the worst 2 months that we ever had. Like, you know, and then like 3 months later, we suddenly had the best month that we've ever had. So so it was a bit scary, but the thing is that, you know, sometimes it's important to get out of your comfort zone and just really stretch yourself and do something that's kind of pretty scary. And I know there's some quotes around, you know, do something really scary every day, right? And I think that's For me, that was really the thing that got me over that. It was like, this guy was really supportive that I was working around, you know, just don't worry about it, it's going to happen for you, awesome things will happen, you've just got to do this. Just be confident and, you know, and just drive through it. So, you know, consequently, on the other side of it, you go, oh my God, it was just, oh geez, it was scary for a few months. But, you know, now that we're on the other side of it, it's like, oh, it's just so blissfully awesome. So, yeah, I think that pretty much answers your question.
Yeah, that's good. So get a coach and get out of your comfort zone.
A coach, get out of your comfort zone. Yep.
Excellent. So what's your favourite tool or system for innovation?
Well, look, we bought a product called Infusionsoft. Yeah. We use it to manage basically everything. We use it to manage our members area, all our email marketing, our automation in our business. We found it to be a fantastic product. It was a bit expensive when we first got into it, where we're at with our business. I knew that it was a really powerful tool. The company itself gets a lot of backing. There's a few other products that are similar to it, Entreport and those sort of things, but Infusionsoft is really the gold standard, and I think it's important to work with suppliers of products when you're certainly putting together your business, you know, to work with the best that you can find. And, you know, if it costs you a little bit more, then kind of like just go with it, because you know that your business is going to grow into it rather than your business is going to grow out of it.
That's really great advice there, and like you say, get the best you can buy and look to grow into it. Don't get something that you'll outgrow fairly quickly if you have success.
We've been using WooCommerce. We're moving over to the Infusionsoft Gateway. WooCommerce is, it's a great product, but it's just not scalable for us anymore. We use Xero for our accounting, which is a fantastic product. But those are really the two big products. We use WordPress as our platform for web development. If you look at those products, WordPress is probably the leading website development platform on the planet at the moment. Xero is certainly for small businesses one of the leading financial accounting packages, and Infusionsoft is by far for small businesses the leading business automation / marketing product. Currently available to us. So I think that's really important. Those are the main products that we use. I use Outlook for my email. We use Outlook Office 365, is it, or
360? Yeah, online, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So, you know, we don't have a server. We've just got a NAS server sitting in the laundry that we connect to for storage, and we just run computers off it, and all our, you know, we don't have a server running file management or email or anything like that. It's all, you know, cloud service now. I was really reluctant to move into the cloud service. I hate paying subscriptions years ago. Now it's like, now everything we pay for is subscription based.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we want the best. You know, we want something reliable. We don't want to. I don't want to manage, you know, a server. I don't want to manage WordPress. We have our WordPress site hosted on WP Engine. It's managed by WP Curve.
Yeah.
You know,
you're talking all the services that I'd endorse too. So Infusionsoft, WP Engine, WordPress, WP Curve. Yeah, great.
Exactly. So, you know,
Where do you store your videos and that online?
We use Vistia a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. We use Vistia for our sales videos. We don't use Vistia because it's for all our videos, because we're only interested in really getting stats for our sales videos to find out where people are dropping out and stuff, whether they're relevant. But we use Vimeo for all our members area content. So because we don't really care about the engagement with those videos. We know that they're, you know, most people are not viewing them online anyway. They're downloading them onto their mobile devices so they can play them anywhere, right? So they can train to them. And that's the great thing about video content is that it's like I'm in the room training the person. So it replaces that whole one-to-one, you know, instead of me running a session to five people, I've got at any one time, you know, I'll have people training to my videos anywhere in the world. I don't have to be there in the room and just watch it. But anyway, to answer that question, so we use Vimeo for delivery because we can lock it up and secure it. And we use Wistia for our sales videos because we can get statistics on engagement.
Excellent. What's the best way to keep a project on track? Or perhaps even keep one of your coaching clients on track?
Well, let's talk about projects to keep them on track. All right, because being a project manager, I think the important thing about keeping projects on track, the most fundamentally important thing is the scope of the project. You know, we talk about the cone of uncertainty. So the cone of uncertainty. When you start off in a project, there's a lot of unknowns.
Mm.
And it's important as you're progressing through that project to understand that that cone of uncertainty, the things that you don't know about, is getting less and less.
Mm.
If things that you're uncertain about are getting more and more as you're progressing through the project, then you've got a big issue with your project, all right? Part of that's got to do with managing the scope of the project. Like, you know, the thing is that as you get into projects, it's like, oh, we could do this and we could do that. And it's like, the first thing is you've got to be able to deliver something and get it across the line. And one of the biggest issues and one of the greatest and downfalls about software development is that there's so much innovation and so much scope for what you can do with it.
Mm.
It's just overwhelming. So it's important, I think, and like we did with our members area, we kind of just stitched it together to start off with some pretty basic functionality, with the whole intent of just getting it out there and see what learnings we were going to get from it. And then use that feedback to develop the new members area, because we knew version one was not going to be perfect. We knew that there was going to be a whole lot of issues with it, but we didn't know what those issues were going to be, right? So let's just get it out there, and rather than second-guessing, oh, what if we, you know, and going down some garden path around developing some functionality or feature or some automation that may not necessarily be required, we just got something together pretty, you know, really quickly to market, and then just left it really open, right? And then people started, oh, what if you could do this and feedback on that, and oh, this is not working, and how about if you did that? And it's like we gathered that feedback and that created our version two. So when it comes to projects, I think it's important just to keep the scope really nice and tight and just deliver the basics and let your clients decide on what the innovation is going to be in the next release of that.
Mm.
That's really been a real powerful one. And that means that you're really 80-20ing it. You're actually focusing on the stuff that's really important to your clients, because at the end of the day, that's who you're selling to.
It's the lean startup model in some ways, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sort of. It's classic lean startup, but, you know, it's very powerful. You know, I've got people that just, oh, I've got to get this perfect. And, you know, we'll release stuff with, and I know it's a bit bad to do it, but people understand it. Some people get a bit frustrated with it, but people love seeing the growth happen.
Mm.
And it builds that community. They go, oh, yeah, well, I remember when I was on this, and it was like, oh, boy, released the first one, it was just a nightmare.
Mm.
You know, but, oh, it's just so much better now, and they see that. And it means that they're enthusiastic about what's going to happen in the future.
Mm, that's right.
And it helps with that retention. So there's good and bad things. Like, we did lose a few people, you know, through some of the issues that we have in the members area. But I think in the long term, it's meant that we've been able to get something out to market really quickly. And it's meant that we've been able to grow the product. So those people that we kind of burnt a little bit was just part of that, you know, process. And I think we were a lot better off by doing that rather than trying to get it all right at first. Yeah. So. Mm. Yep.
All right. And the final one for the buzz is, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Oh, boy, that's a wild thing. Anybody can do that. Jeez, okay. I think it's important to look at your market niches and really focus on what you can do differently. And I know that's kind of like, oh, yeah, well, you know, how does that happen? So I like to put a bit of a story together around, you know, our coaching model. So when, you know, like most coaches on the planet, whether it be a cycle coach or any other coach, they get a few clients and, you know, they have meetings with them physically and they, you know, they have these one-on-ones with them, and it's all very time-consuming, and there's a limit to what they can deal with, and they can only build up a local community that's based about 20 kilometres. So it's really starting to think beyond the square. So our coaching model was, we're not going to do that. Our first product that we delivered was remote coaching. So we really successfully delivered. I mean, we used to go to the nationals. I'd be like, I'd never met these people in person, but I've been coaching them for 12 months leading up to the, you know, the nationals.
Yeah.
And I used to go along to the nationals, and there they were. Oh, yeah, they're on their trainer. I've been coaching them. We'd never met before, right? Mm. We'd had a Skype conversation, but I'd never met them physically. And we'd come back from the Nationals, 12, you know, 14 medals from the people that were racing. So we were really, really successful. But I think, you know, for us, part of that was that think beyond, you know, think outside the square around. How can you make your business more leverageable? How can you make it more, you know, involve more people? How can you use emerging technologies to your advantage? You know, really use the power of the internet and really use the power of automation to leverage your business. You know, we employ people in the Philippines to do a lot of our basic, you know, business stuff. So, and we actually, most of it's project centric, so I'm not actually employing them full time or part time. I just, when I've got some work to do that's project based, they do it in the Philippines, you know. So it means that I don't have to find somebody here in Australia. I'm already working with a crowd. So it's really looking for innovative ways that you can distinguish yourself. And, yeah, so I mean, I'm kind of like, yeah, I don't know what the key is for turning that on. But for my story was, you know, I looked at the coaching model and gone, well, let's define about what it's not going to be and what it is going to be. And for me, it was, how can I deliver coaching services to anybody, you know, in the world? Okay, so how do I do that? Ask that question. How can I do that while being anywhere in the world?
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm asking that question. And sometimes it may take years for you to come up with the answers. You know, and it may take even further to develop those products. But it actually took me 10 years. When I came to Australia, it took me 10 years to find out what I wanted to do. Because I looked at lots of businesses, and I ended up deciding on, I wanted to have a business around my passion, and I wanted to have a business that was, you know, I could run anywhere in the world and coach anywhere, you know, anybody. And I thought, well, cycle coaching is a fantastic model to do that, so let's do it with that. But it's a really innovative model. But, you know, we are really, there is really nobody doing what we're doing. There are similarities with some of the other membership areas and cycle coaching, but we're really competing on a global market. We may be competing with three or four people.
That's right. Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think, you know, you focused on a very tight niche, so cycle coaching and online cycle coaching, and then building a community and a membership product around that. And I think, as far as I know, one of the other ones that I subscribe to on, I don't subscribe to it, but I've bought some CDs back in the days of DVDs. Troy Jacobson, I don't know if you know.
Troy Coach Jacobson. Troy. Coach Troy has a Spinnerball series.
That's right, yeah. And he, I think he has a little bit of an online model, but it's a little different as far as I know. So it's sort of on-demand download of one-on-one.
So, you know, Troy's an interesting, you know, he's an interesting example of somebody that's really stagnated with their innovation. You know, Troy could have taken it a lot further. Troy, because I've watched his business model, he had a fantastic business model. He used to sell DVDs through cycling shops. So he had a dealer network model, which is great. You know, but the thing was that DVDs became a bit old school. So he innovated and he decided, okay, well, I'm going to take control of this and deliver it electronically. So he you know, dismantled his dealer network because obviously he wasn't, you know, because he was going through a wholesaler and a reseller. So a wholesaler would import the DVDs into, say, Australia, and then they'd, you know, dish them out to their cycle shops in, you know, Australia. And we know that that model is just progressively breaking down because people are just purchasing stuff online as a physical product, and now it's more electronic. So he's he hasn't created a membership area. Really, I mean, Coach Troy could do that quite successfully because he's already got a lot of the resources.
That's right,
for his training products. But yeah, he's really sort of hasn't taken it to the next step. And that's probably what, that's certainly what we've done. But he's certainly got an online where, you know, you actually have kind of like a membership thing, and you can download his DVDs and stuff, or you can buy them digitally. But he's always having sales, which, you know, which leads me to believe that he's just struggling a little bit because there's no real market distinction around him. And maybe Sufferfest videos or something like that. They don't really have much of a community behind what they're doing. And I think that's really the important thing that needs to be established in businesses today, is people need to feel like they belong to something. Especially when they're really passionate about whatever they're doing. You know, a lot of people that we deal with, they're business owners, or they just love cycling, or they're, you know, there's people when they go away on holiday, they don't want to go to a beach and drink pina coladas. They want to have an adventure, right? So they're pretty motivated, you know, high achiever sort of people, and it's great working with them. But you know, that's the sort of market that we're dealing with. So So I hope that sort of answers the question.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. So, you've given us a hint, I think, already, but what's the future for cycling in form and for you?
Yeah, well, you know, our primary goal is really building our sales funnels out, now working on that, and just really implementing a lot of stuff, the products that, you know, product technology, like, you know, that I've purchased when I was over in the States quite recently. And really working on leveraging out the model more. We're working on building out our partner network. So what we've been doing with Bicycle Network and a few other partners, we're really expanding that. So we're looking at doing more stuff with partnering with other other event organisers and other people within the industry. So those are really, it's really working on the front end, because we know we've got a fantastic product. So for us, it's just really a matter of working on the front end of our business and promoting it. So, you know, it's great if you can put together a great engine that promotes your products. It's even better if you get other people to promote them for you.
So we're
putting together an affiliate type product that, you know, at a really high level. So not like the sort of, you know, yeah, so, you know, we'll be looking at partnering with big event organisers and bike manufacturers.
That's exciting.
You know, because so that's really where we're taking to the next level, and there's lots of, you know, we're obviously building more product within the members area, so and really leveraging myself more out of the business too. So at the moment, you know, I'm doing coaching within the business, but it'd be nice to actually isolate myself from that in the future. At the moment, the product's based around me. And I don't really spend much time working in that because I don't need to now. But in the future, I'll probably look at seeing whether I can employ more people to do a lot more of the day-to-day running of what we're doing. So more specialists sort of in the, you know, areas around, you know, Facebook marketing and content development, video editing, you know, my accounting, all those sort of things that just I don't really need to do anymore.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right, so let's get on to the competition now. So as I said earlier, it's a copy of The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. So he tells the reader what are the secrets to finding that automatic customer and developing a business model such as the one David's described to us today. So what we'd like you to do is actually contribute to the discussion here by posting a comment underneath the video, and David, what are you looking to learn from our customer from our visitors?
Well, I think there's two things. One is the pain point around you know, the frustrations and the whole dealing with the day-to-day business runnings, and looking for, you know, looking at ways in which you can leverage yourself out of that. You know, and the other one is maybe, you know, think about how you can build your product into something that's that has more of a community around it.
Okay, that's excellent. So what are the pain points and frustrations that maybe prevent you or necessitate you to actually get more leverage in your business? And the second thing, how can you build a community around that?
Yeah, great.
Fantastic. So leave comments under the video. I'll get David to come back in a couple of weeks' time, have a look at that and award the prize.
Beautiful, fantastic, excellent.
Great, David. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give anyone that wants to be a leader in their field?
Think big. Yep. Okay. Yep. You know, just think really big.
That's fantastic. Great. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. I think we've gone on for well over an hour already. So I really appreciate the time you spent with us. Where can people reach out and thank you?
Oh, look, basically on our website, I deal with a lot of emails, so there's a little contact us form at the bottom of it. That's a fantastic place to do it. We do have telephone numbers, but we find answering telephone a bit of a pain, so we don't try and do that too much.
Send the email through the contact form.
That's the best way to get form. Yeah. That'll go into Zendesk. We use Zendesk as our help desk system, another one of our systems that we like. And I'm on that. during weekdays on that. So, best way to get hold of me.
All right, and I'll post a link to that underneath the blog post and the video, and also to the website and some of the other things that David's got online.
Fantastic, excellent.
So thanks again for spending so much time with us today, David. It's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I'll be fascinated to see what happens in the future with Cycling in Form. And when I get back from San Francisco and recover fully from this fractured shoulder, I might actually get on and sign up for one of your programs so I can get fit again.
Fantastic. I'll look forward to working with you.
Yeah, okay.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Bye. Well, what a fascinating interview full of valuable insights, ideas, and lessons for all of us. I hope you enjoyed meeting David as much as I enjoyed interviewing him on the podcast, and that you learned lots from this interview. All the show notes for this episode will be at anovabiz.com.au/David Heatley. That is DavidHeatley, all lowercase, all one word, anovabiz.com.au/David Heatley. We'll have all of the links and everything that we spoke about in this episode, including all the resources there for you to look at. Remember to leave your comments underneath the video for your chance to win a copy of The Automatic Customer by John Warrilow. Leave your comments and tell David about the pain points and frustrations around running a day-to-day business and trying to leverage yourself out of that business. And secondly, also tell us about how building a community around that business is going to help you in your endeavors. I'll get David to swing by in a few weeks' time and award that prize. Now, one of the things I neglected to do on the interview, I was so excited and wrapped up in the discussion with David, was ask him about a guest that I should interview in the future. So I'll need to follow up with him on that by email, and I'll post that underneath the video if he has a suggestion for us. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the InnovaBuzz podcast. We'd love you to review the podcast and give us some feedback, because first of all, reviews help us rank and get found, and your feedback helps us improve. You can review us over on iTunes or on Stitcher. And while you're there, please subscribe so you'll never miss a future episode. Remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and keep innovating.